I've had people say that I'm a self-made man. I'd like to set the record straight, 'cause I never could have planned the way my life has gone, or the blessings I've received. It had nothing to do with me. Now I love to sing and play and travel with these songs, but I've got to give the praise back to where it all belongs. Before I was even born, he knew what my job would be. He made me who I am for all the world to see. That's what I love about him. That's why I talk about him. And friend, I'd be lost without him. He makes this world make sense to me. And he let his life in just so he could be my friend. That's what I love about Jesus.
On the phone with us, Mr. Paul Brandt. And you need to know this about Paul. He is a genuine thing. I mean, he's the real deal. This guy doesn't have his head up in the clouds. He is Canada's own. He is the most awarded Canadian male country artist, if I got my facts straight. That's kind of a big introduction there. I hope he can live up to it, Paul.
I don't know, man. How are you doing, Drew?
Great to have you on board.
Great to be here.
Thanks for doing the Ontario thing. How many more concerts do you have?
We've got two more on this concert tour. We took off. We did 37 shows, it'll be by the end of this, in 45 days. So it's been nonstop, and we're having a great time out here.
What are you, nuts? Give me a break.
It's been killer.
Man, that's a tough go. All right, here's the deal. I've told listeners this already. I'm not the hugest country fan in the world. I mean, I'm not, right? When I grew up, my dad forced me to listen to country music. And I got baggage in that area, right? I got a lot of baggage.
Gotcha.
But you were kind enough to invite us with Lori down to your concert in Mount Forest, and I surprised my wife, and we kind of sat there, and I was impressed, man. I really, really was. And I'm not just saying that to suck up because you're my guest.
Thank you so much.
You seriously, I mean, you know, God has just dropped a whole lot of stuff in your life. This is a good, good thing.
Well, we've really been extremely blessed and had a great time so far, you know, in the last 9 or 10 years in the music industry. I started when I was about 13 years old, singing and performing for people. I picked up a guitar for the first time then. But before that, I grew up going to a church that was, it was a Brethren church, so there were no instruments allowed in the church. It was all a cappella singing, and it was a great way to learn about music and to sort of come up, you know, through music. And, you know, ever since, you know, I picked that guitar up and started to write, everything just sort of came together, and I'm just having a great time doing what I'm doing now.
Paul, it sounds to me from the research that I've done that your family is actually a real part of your life, you know, like you're not Mr. Dysfunctional.
Well, we all have our dysfunctions, you know, but my family definitely has been a huge part of, you know, supporting me and helping me. My parents became Christians when I was around 5 or 6 years old, and that was when I was introduced to the gospel. And at that early age, you know, I mean, I hadn't been exposed to a whole lot, but I knew that I needed something in my life. I remember that first time that I could understand the difference between right and wrong. And that was as, you know, simple as it was for me. I knew that Jesus loved me and had died for me and wanted to be my friend. And so I made that decision at a very early age. And my parents have been extremely supportive, not just with career and those sorts of things, but they've just been supportive to me in letting me know, me and my two younger sisters know how much they love us and support us as long as we're doing what we're doing to try and bring glory to God's name, then they're 100% behind us.
Your mom and dad, are they still going strong?
Yeah, they are. My dad's a paramedic, and he's done that for about 32 years in the Calgary area. And my mother, she's actually a registered nurse. I used to be an RN for a couple of years. I did that before I started with music. And my mom and I went to school together for a year. She was a year ahead of me in college, which was just a bit awkward.
Man, that's weird, man. That, I mean, does that not cramp the
the dating style,
yeah,
or what?
You know, your mother comes up and gives you a big kiss on the forehead at the most inopportune times, you know, so.
They just thought you were, you know, hitting on older women, I guess, in the school.
Yeah, yeah, right.
All right, so your parents have been supportive, and they're involved in the medical field. You're involved in the medical field. You were an RN at a children's hospital. Buddy, what was that like?
It was really very interesting. You know, I worked at the Alberta Children's Hospital, and I really enjoyed it. It was a great job. I thought that I was going to continue working on, get my degree, and then try and work my way through medical school. That was always kind of part of the plan for me, and then music took off in the middle of that process. But when you work... I think almost anywhere in the medical profession, you're faced with life and death issues every single day, and you start to really realize how precious our time is and how important it is to take advantage of it. And so that was, I think, a really great way for me to start my music career. Being at the hospital, it kind of gives you a new perspective on things and an urgency to the time that we have.
Folks, we're on the phone with Mr. Paul Brandt. And, here's the catchphrase, right? Here's the typical thing. Country music sensation, right? I mean, seriously, you're doing this country pretty proud, because if I've got my facts straight, you are the most awarded male country artist in the history of Canada.
Yeah, that blows my mind when I hear that. But, yeah, it's true. And it's, you know, really more than anything taken me by surprise what's been going on. I wasn't one of these people who thought, okay, I want to be a musician and I'm going to do this for a living. It really just kind of happened. I remember entering talent contests and things just rolling together. I kept winning contests, then I started getting phone calls from record companies and got an incredible opportunity to go down to Nashville and start this whole thing out.
And your dad went with you on that trip, yeah?
He came down on one of the contests. We went down to Memphis and performed there, and then drove up to Nashville for the first time. And, so I got to share that with him, and he's, you know, like I said, both my parents have been extremely supportive.
Now, growing up in the Brethren family and not doing the TV or radio thing before 13, buddy, that's weird.
It was very strange, you know, but it was a cool way to grow up, because we were really isolated from a lot of outside influence, and, you know, musically too. I mean, there really wasn't a lot of influence there. So when I started to write, it was out of a very pure place, you know, and I think that, you know, ended up being a strength for me. When I moved to Nashville, you know, and got into high school, moved to Nashville after that, it's like the floodgates of music started to open for me, and I started getting to a lot of different types of things musically. But starting out from that pure gospel background was really a strength.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I did the research on you, right? I mean, you know, that's what you're supposed to do when you get a big wig on the show. You do the research. And what I did, I normally type in the guest name, and then I put in controversy beside it to see if I could dig up any dirt.
Right.
You know the only dirt I could find on you?
What?
Apparently you sang the national anthem over at some football game in Edmonton, and you didn't sing any of it in French.
Yeah, that's pretty controversial.
That's all I could get.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm nothing against French people. I have a very difficult time speaking the language. So, you know, it would have been more controversial if I would have sang it in French. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, you would have slaughtered it. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, people keep saying, in this stuff that I keep reading on you, people keep saying you're a man of integrity. You're a man of integrity. You're a man of integrity. How is that possible, being in an industry known for hurting, cheating, and drinking?
You know, it's funny. I don't know. You know, I really, you know, from the first moment I can remember, my parents always said, you know, if there's a job worth doing, it's worth doing right. And that kind of extended as I grew in my Christian faith and you know, thought seriously about, you know, doing what I was doing and representing Christ while I was doing it. And, you know, we all make mistakes. And in this job especially, I'm put on a pedestal all the time. You know, people only see a certain part of my life. You know, unfortunately, I've got a great family. My wife, Elizabeth, to give me good swift kicks in the butt whenever I'm getting too far above my raising, you know.
Yeah, I can't see her putting up with much of your stuff,
no,
man.
No, she doesn't. She's just an incredible friend, and she's been an incredible asset to me in my career, and she's just I can't imagine doing it without her. She's just been incredible and it's a real support and encouragement through all of these difficult moments in the music industry. You know, it is a lot of glitz and glamour, and it's a lot of fun, but being in the spotlight all the time comes with a lot of responsibility too, and she helps me see it all straight.
Does she sing on tour with you regularly, or has it just been on this tour here of Ontario?
There was only one tour that Liz didn't come out on. She took a break for a while from the road, but she's been out on the road with me right from the beginning of my career. that first year we toured, did about 190 shows across all of the world. I mean, we played over in Europe, across North America, and it's really great. You know, we learned early in my career that we had to make sure that we were going to spend a lot of time together, and we made that decision early on that we weren't going to spend a lot of time apart, because this job's hard enough to keep a marriage going in, and we just really felt like we needed to spend that time together.
Well, actually, I'm going to ask you that question. I mean, how are you going to survive in this industry? How is your marriage going to survive?
You know, a lot of it is just drawing lines. You know, you have to say, this is what I will do and this is what I won't do. And I remember when I first started, the record company literally asking me questions like, what's more important to you, your wife or your career?
You're kidding.
And they want to hear career every time, you know. And I decided that, you know, I wasn't going to stand for that and draw some hard and fast lines that I think cost me in some ways in my career. It made the record company realize that they weren't in charge at an early stage of my career, and they don't like that.
Yeah, but that's a healthy boundary to set up right off the bat.
I'm really glad that I did it. You know, I remember them asking me to miss a part of my honeymoon early on in my career for an industry event, and I said, you guys are crazy. I said, you're going to remember this for about a month. My wife's going to remember it for the rest of my life. I don't think so. You know?
And remind you of it daily.
Absolutely. So yeah. It's been really good. And, you know, the way that Liz and I have prioritized things in our lives is God first, and then our marriage, and then everything else comes after that somewhere. So it's worked out really well.
One of the songs on your latest CD this time around, nice album cover, by the way, or CD cover, you can tell how old I am, is The King.
Yeah.
Buddy, that kills me.
It is a humorous look at marriage, and, you know, I think that that's one of the things that's a real strength for Liz and I, is that we do, you know, find a lot of humor and fun in our relationship, too. And it's a typical browbeaten husband song. The poor guy really wishes that he was the king, but everyone knows that he's not.
Yeah, yeah. You and Liz have this really interesting chemistry on stage. She stares at you, although the other, when I was chatting with you in the tour bus there on Sunday night in Mount Forest, great concert, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
She says, I'm not really staring at you. I'm kind of staring off in the distance, you know. But it looks like I'm staring at you.
Because she's heard all my stories before.
Oh, yeah. It's like yada, 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 yada. Like, remember the Charlie Brown, the teacher on Charlie Brown?
Yeah, wah, wah, wah,
wah, wah, wah, yeah. Okay, what comes with the glitz and glamour of Mr. Paul Brandt these days? One of the things I heard was you were on the set of ER.
Yeah, I did get the chance to go and visit the set of ER, which was a huge thrill for me. That was fairly early in my career. We took a trip out to Los Angeles to meet some of the label folks, and that was when ER was, you know, just in the middle of their first heyday and things were really taking off. And so that was exciting. I got to meet some of the cast members and get some autographs and hang out, and I really enjoyed that. It was one of my favorite shows then.
Hey, Liz seems so level-headed. Does she remind you, like, daily that this is just a bit of a dream and the heavy dose of reality is going to eventually come? I mean, does she tap you on the shoulder? I mean, because she, like, her background is pure mathematics.
Yeah, you know, she's very logical, and she kind of, we did a TV interview recently where the interviewer was asking us about our roles, you know, and the camera was off for a little while, and Liz is great at always switching the interviewer around and interviewing the interviewer.
Yeah, she did that to me on Sunday night.
She's really good at it. She cuts to the chase, and so she asked the interviewer while they're changing the tape, you know, what are your roles with you and your wife and your family? So he's explaining, and then he pointed it back at her one more time. She said, well, you know, in a lot of ways, because of my pure mathematics background, I tend to be the logical one. Paul's the sensitive songwriter type. So really, Liz goes, in a lot of ways, I'm the man and Paul's the woman in our relationship. And I look at the camera, and it was still on.
Oh, you know, beautiful.
Same thing again. So it was pretty funny. But, you know, she helps me really keep it in perspective. I think that, you know, Liz has really encouraged me to look at my career in a way, and, you know, the experiences that we've had, you know, being able to go overseas with organizations like World Vision, have really shown us that if we're not attaching the name of Christ to what we're doing and letting people know the purpose and reason behind why we do the things that we do, the way that we do them, then it's kind of pointless. And she always is great at helping me balance that and keep that in perspective.
Yeah, that's a good match, man. That is a good combination. One of the statements you're most quoted on is saying that you just wanted to make a difference in someone's life.
It's true.
What's the driving force behind that?
Well, that's really been a learning process for me, trying to figure out what that difference is. My mom tells me when I was when I was really young, we were walking through a department store one time. I was about 5 years old, and a little guy in front of me fell down. He was walking with his mother, and he fell down. And she said, I let go of her hand, and I ran over, and I helped him up right away. And I saw my dad, you know, as a paramedic, he was my hero. And so helping people has always been a big focus for me because that's how I was raised, you know. And making a difference initially for me when I got into music was about being positive and doing good things, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I've found that, you know, the longer that I've been a Christian, the more I've realized what that really means and what Christ did for us. Making a difference is a lot more than just being a good person. It's about showing people the relationship that you have. It would be like, I mean, me living my life as a Christian and not letting other people know about what I've got would be almost the same as a person who had the cure for AIDS and then didn't tell anybody about it.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I have the cure, and I feel so blessed and fortunate to be able to share that with people, and I think making a difference for me is a lot more about sharing my witness now.
On the phone with Paul Brandt. Paul, I can relate to what you were just saying there with our fathers, because my dad's in the funeral service industry.
Okay.
And I saw him serve people and help people and serve people and help people. You know, and I think that just kind of got stuck in me like it did you, you know.
Yeah, you know.
Except the difference is when your father screws up being a paramedic, that's when my father comes into it, you know.
Exactly, I gotcha.
As far as people that have hurt you in life, because, you know, country music really is a lot about hurting, you know. There seems to be a lot of lyrical hurt. You know, the old joke, what do you get when you play country music backwards?
Right.
You get your shoes back, your dog back, and your wife back, and
exactly.
All that kind of stuff. Who's hurt you the most in life, without any names, you know? Can you, like, what's the biggest kind of personal relationship hurt that you've gone through?
Oh, man, that's tough. I don't know. You know, I'm not sure what I would pick. I think that there are moments in my career, you know, early on when I was first getting started and learning about what the music business was all about, where you know, I always wanted to just, you know, I was pretty naive when I got into it and learning about, you know, what people are looking for in the industry and how easily, you know, they'll try and take advantage. There were times where I thought that I had really close friends and it turned out that it wasn't about friendship, you know, and those kinds of things can be kind of hurtful. But I don't know. I mean, it's tough for me to think about, you know, real hurtful type situations like that. But if I had to pick one, that would probably, you know, be a part of it. This is a tough business.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, and I mean, just along with that, I mean, how do you spiritually survive being on the road, being in the industry? I mean, what spiritual disciplines do you have on the road, if any?
Well, you know, on this trip, what we've tried to do, it's really hard to be structured when you're on the road, but that's something that we've tried to do on this tour. We've gone through the book, The Purpose-Driven Life, with most of the guys on the bus. We've been really blessed to have a group of Christian guys on this tour, and we've been reading that daily and going through it together. I think a big part of it, too, is, you know, getting into the Word and reading your Bible. I mean, you can't know what God wants for your life and understand what your purpose is if you don't let Him talk to you. And one of the ways that He does that is through His Word. And so I, you know, try and stay focused on that, and that helps give you an eternal perspective. It helps you see past the record industry and realize that we're only here for a little while, and this is only a little piece of it.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's talk about musical influences here. That's the typical interview question, so we might as well throw that out at you. I read that you're stoked about Clint Black's voice, Dwight Yoakam, Harry Connick Jr., George Strait, maybe Willie Nelson. Did I cover it all? Did I get it all there or what?
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of different musical influences. I when I was first starting, I got into U2 quite a bit, and I really liked the passion behind their music, and you know, the fact that they have a social conscience to what they do, I think, is really appealing. But I loved Harry Connick Jr. Garth Brooks was a big influence at the beginning of my career. And, you know, I like to listen to as many different types of music as I can and just take little bits and pieces of it and make it my own.
What music don't you like? I mean, come on, be honest. Don't give me this politically correct. I love all kinds of music.
I'm not a huge polka fan, okay?
Right, yes. That's a good answer, buddy. That's a, man. You know, actually, I was listening to your CD on the way down to the station today, and you've got Harry Connick stuff in you. You do.
I love singing like that. I sang vocal jazz when I was in high school and got to travel around singing with them all the time, and that was really my first introduction to performing up on a stage in a serious kind of a way, and I love crooning. I love his voice, and for a while in high school I actually thought I was Harry Connick Jr. I did my hair like him and everything, you know, so yeah, I'm a big fan of his. We actually played a theater recently that he had just come through over in Brockville, and so that was a huge thrill to get to play on the same stage in a similar venue. It was kind of cool.
Have you met him yet?
I haven't met him. I saw him play at the Ryman Auditorium down in Nashville, and it was just a magical night. He's just an incredibly talented guy. So maybe one of these days we'll cross paths.
Okay, well, if you need me to set something up, just let me know, okay?
Absolutely, I'll do that.
And now, you've been described, your music has been described as, songs that connect, advice that reaches, performances that touch. I mean, they all sound like nice bumper stickers, but the reality is I was at one of your concerts, and they're true.
Oh, thank you. I one of the things I love to do in concert is pull people from, the point of, feeling emotions that they might want to cry with, and then bringing them completely to the flip side where they're laughing their heads off or just, rocking out and having a great time.
Yeah, so you just want to jerk us around emotionally. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that is a bit of it, I mean, my favorite shows do that. They just pull you through an incredible range of emotions, and I love to perform music that, entertains people, but at the same time, perform songs that make them think about things that maybe they'd never thought about before. The song that we heard earlier, That's What I Love About Jesus, is just a blatant profession of what I believe. But there are songs on other albums like The Sycamore Tree or Virgil and the Holy Ghost that deal with issues of salvation, deal with difficult life issues and ways to get through them, and sort of open people's eyes to a different way of looking at things.
Paul, your lyrics do penetrate, and obviously you're writing from who you are, from the depths. You have creativity. You've been blessed, but thinking about pain and writing out of pain. Whenever I write, some of my best writing comes when I'm depressed or I'm hurt or that sort of thing. Kind of an odd question, but whose death, Paul, would impact you the most right now in your life?
Oh man, Liz and I think are so close and such good friends that would probably be the one that would devastate the most. We were talking late the other night and even praying about that together. That if we ever did have to go, that we would go together because it would be really, really difficult. Oh. And I she's definitely. I know the one that God prepared for me, and it's so much fun to see as our marriage grows, just how much we were made for each other. It's very, very cool.
How'd you guys meet? Is there some ooey gooey story? Or?
Yeah, actually, I I went home. I just started my career. I was out on the road and promoting the album. The first single, My Heart Has a History, was just getting ready to come out back in 95. 96, and I went home from Nashville for just a quick visit. I went to church with my parents, and I was hanging out, and this woman got on stage and started to sing, and it was Liz, and I was smitten. I knew that was the woman that I was going to marry, but I didn't know, I didn't know her name at the time. I hadn't met her, I didn't know anything about her. I tried to find her after the service, and she had left. There were four services that weekend, and she was singing at all of them, so she just came and sang and then went back to school. And so I didn't get to meet her, and I had to go back to Nashville the next day. And so I'm thinking for the next few months about this woman that I'm going to marry that I've never met. And I came back Christmas Eve 1995, and the pastor of that church asked me to come and sing that night. And he'd also asked Liz to sing that night, too. And I've asked him since if he was trying to set
us up. That was a setup, man.
He definitely was. But he didn't know, that I had this interest. And so I saw Liz that night and went up and introduced myself. She got up to sing her song and then finished and waited at the back of the church while I was singing mine. And I remember just being so nervous. I mean, my knees were shaking. And I had been in front of thousands of people performing by this time, and it didn't bother me. But with her there, I almost lost it. And I finished the last chord of the song, and I looked up, and she was walking out the door. And I still didn't have her phone number. And so I unplugged my guitar while it was still ringing, and the crowd's looking at me like I'm nuts. I took off down the aisle and stopped her just before she walked out that back door. And as irreverent as it might sound, I picked her up at church.
Buddy.
And that's how it all began.
That's an ooey gooey one, man. How did you propose?
It was actually an equally elaborate story.
Am I going to need a bucket?
You might. I don't know.
Man.
I was on the concert trail. We were doing a lot of festival dates down in the United States, and I had this ring burning a hole in my pocket for a while, and I was asked to come up to Calgary to do a speaking engagement for a children's cancer camp. It was basically this camp works with families that have children who have cancer. And so I went up to speak, and I thought, well, this would be the perfect time for me to sneak into town and surprise Liz. So I flew up on my way on up to Calgary. I stopped in Dallas-Fort Worth and called Liz's dad from the airport there, my connection, and asked if it was okay with him. You know, he said, "Oh, I thought you were going to do that." You know, and I went into my speaking engagement, and then I was driving over to Liz's place to propose. And I was on a cell phone, and I'm talking to her, and I was lying to her the entire way, telling her that, oh, yeah, you know, I'm down in Texas, and we're doing another show, and, you know, things are, you know, going really well, and I visited the radio station. This was the same story that she had heard for the entire year that we were dating, you know, over and over again. I was always visiting another radio station. So she's kind of half listening and going, And I finally got to her house. I'm still talking to her on the cell phone, and I hid behind the garage. But before I did that, I went up and I put a little package on the front porch. It had a gift in it, like a T-shirt and a hat from somewhere that I'd been that she was asking about. And I said, oh, by the way, did you get that that package that I had my sister drop off for you? I think it's on your front step. And she goes, no. So she comes out, opens the door, and she looks, and here's this package. And she picked it up, turned around to walk back inside, and I said, well, did you get it? And she's like, yeah. I said, do you like it? And she goes, well, I haven't looked at it yet. And I came around the corner. Her back is to me, and I just yelled out off the phone, do you like it? And she turned around, and she kept the phone up to her ear, and it was almost like she was going to say, you're not going to believe this, but you're standing right in front of me. You know? I totally got her. And her whole family was waiting there behind her. So when she turned around to hand the phone back to her father, her dad had a camera there, and he snapped a picture of me standing on the front porch with the ring in my hand, and Liz's face just completely red because we got her off guard. So it was pretty cool.
That is beautiful. Beautiful. Do you know how few guys do it, you know? Yeah. I got a buddy here in the studio, and he's saying, I can't compete with that, man. I just can't do that one at all. All right. Now, what about, I'm sorry to ask you this question. It's kind of like your mother-in-law maybe ask you this all the time or whatever. Kids, right? Are you going to have kids?
We don't have kids yet. We are hoping to start a family soon. Our plan is to move back to Calgary and you know, be around our families a little bit more. It's been 10 years that we've been down in Nashville, and you know, hopefully start a family of our own, but definitely have those built-in babysitters around in case we do have kids, you know, with the grandparents. And I'm really looking forward to that part of life. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Well, when you did the nursing thing with the kids, I mean, did you like kids? Is that, like, did you just fall in love with them?
I do. I really love working with kids a lot, and I really like kids. I knew at that point in my life that I really, you know, wanted to have kids someday, but I was still too big a kid myself, you know, and I'm feeling a lot more ready for that. I keep trying to convince Liz that I've already changed my share of diapers in my previous career, so she's not buying it though. I don't think I'm going to get off that easy.
No way, buddy, not at all. Can you tell me about Amy Lee?
Yeah, when I worked at the Children's Hospital, there were so many kids that really influenced my life in getting to know them and know their families. But Amy Lee was really one that stood out. She was only 13 years old, and she had cystic fibrosis. And I worked with her for quite a while and got to know her really well. And she was just an incredible kid. Like, she was the kind of kid that truly seized the moment, you know. And it wasn't in just a, you know, just that typical way that we normally would say that phrase. I mean, she just did everything that she could to the best of her ability and seized every moment, especially with people that she loved. She was always going out of her way to make sure that people knew how she felt about them and how they impacted her. And I remember coming home from a trip to Nashville. When I first got my record deal, I didn't quit my day job right away. I kept going back and forth between Nashville and Calgary and doing both for a while. And I came home from a trip to Nashville and found out when I got back on shift that Amy wasn't doing very well. And we knew that she probably was going to die soon. And I remember walking in to see her and see how she was doing. And you know, the machines are beeping and the doctors and nurses are running in and out and taking care of her. And I'll never forget the first thing out of her mouth, she said, hey, Paul, how was your trip to Nashville? You know, she was more concerned about me, even on her deathbed, than she was with herself. And I learned such an important lesson from her in just perspective, you know, how to look at things. And you know, it's something that all of us forget a lot. But just she really found a lot in life by making sure she was looking at what was important to other people first. And I really loved her for it.
That's an amazing story, and I'm thankful that you're able to share it, because I read a little bit about it online, and I just think, You know, you're as I said right at the start of the interview, Paul, you're a genuine deal, and I really hope this industry doesn't screw your head up, you know? Because if it does, I'm going to hunt you down.
You do it.
And
you can be my accountability partner.
Oh, buddy. No, seriously, because I've met a lot of people in the industry, and it just does something to them, you know? It sucks them in somehow.
Yeah, it's a tough business, but I think that, you know, I've been really fortunate to have a great group of people around me that will tell it like it is, and, you know, I know and keep it at the front of my mind that this isn't what life is all about. You know, it's really fun, and it's exciting, and it's a great thing to be able to do, but it isn't what it's all about, and it can't be. And when it becomes that, that's when things start getting kind of crazy.
Oh, for sure. Now, when you jumped into the industry, you soon realized your last name was going to be a mouthful for people to kind of get around, right?
Yeah, my original last name was Belo Brzezinski, but the Ukrainian cowboy wasn't going over too well.
No.
You know? So my parents suggested that I change it after the first contest that I was in. The MC sectioned the audience off into five different sections, one for each syllable of my last name, you know, so they could chant my name. And so we flipped through the phone book and we found Brandt. I wanted to keep the same initials, and alphabetically it came right before Brooks in the record store, before Garth Brooks. So I thought that would be a good plan. You know, I'd get my records in the right spot, and it just sort of stuck. And I ended up changing my name to that just to make things a little easier. And now everyone calls my dad Mr. Brandt all the time. So it's pretty funny.
That's neat. It's cool that they gave you permission. I mean, it sounded like the suggestion actually came from them.
Yeah,
you know?
No, it really did. And, you know, my family is extremely important to me. And that name, Belo Brzezinski, it's really important to me because that's where my music came from. My great-grandfather on that side was an opera singer over in Eastern Europe. And I really think that that's where I ended up getting my voice and ability to sing and love for music.
Oh, buddy, your voice, like, seriously, I don't know. Is it bass or baritone?
It's kind of in between. I've got quite a range, and I can kind of even go up into some tenor stuff sometimes, too.
I think, you know what, like, I was at that concert, and talk about swooning. Like, I know you're married, and you're not a giant flirt or anything like that, but when you hit those low notes, man, the chicks go nuts.
It's really fun. You know, people don't usually expect it coming out of me, you know. I guess I don't have the frame for those deep notes or whatever, I don't know, but... I love to sing. I love to influence people with what I'm doing and to let them have a good time with it.
Yeah. Now, how is the tour gone in Ontario? I heard that the only maybe hassle you had so far was the sound blew up in Lindsay, and then you prayed for a child who had to go to the hospital. That was kind of a cool deal.
Yeah. There was the first night we had just switched sound companies out here in the east, and we had some difficulties with the sound equipment. It was actually the kind of problem that never, ever happens. Our sound guy, who's been doing this almost his whole life, has never seen that problem before. And we really feel like there have been, you know, some moments where things have been working a little bit against us while we've been out here, and that was one of those things. And so we prayed, you know, before the show, and I asked the audience if anyone was, you know, if they were accustomed to praying for things like that, to pray for the sound equipment, and it held out for the entire show. And there was a lady who brought her little boy up to the front that night. He got sick in the middle of the show, and they had to actually rush him off to the hospital. So we had to play Convoy early for him. And I, you know, we just said a quick prayer for him, too, during the show. And it was really a cool moment. But out here in Ontario, the shows have been absolutely amazing. We've been having a great time with everybody. Actually, just got off the stage. We did a matinee show here in Belleville, Ontario, today. And had a great time with the folks there. And we're heading off to Kitchener and then Ottawa for the last two shows of the tour.
Now, I know you're not a guy who wants to toot your own horn. So let me say something. And you just make sure I've got the facts straight on this, okay? Your two concerts in Mount Forest, you did for free, basically.
Well, yeah, I mean, those shows, we weren't really sure if they were going to happen. We had some difficulties with, you know, arrangements at the beginning of it with promoting companies and that kind of stuff. And there was a lot of confusion as to whether or not we were going to be there. And I really wanted to go and play those shows just to make sure the fans knew that we really care about them and that it didn't really matter what was going on behind the scenes. We were going to be there, and we were going to let them have the show that they paid for.
Yeah, that's it. They paid for the tickets, and there was some weird stuff going on behind the scene, but you just said, you know what? Forget it. Let's just do it, and these people deserve it. I mean, buddy, that's a classy move.
I couldn't do what I do without the fans, and they're just they've been absolutely supportive and just incredible to me throughout my 10-year career, and I really, you know, respect that. That's very important to me, to make sure that they're having a good time.
On the phone with Paul Brandt, and just about to wrap up our interview with him. I really appreciate your time, Paul.
Oh, no problem.
How do you stop the girls from going goo-goo all over you?
I don't know about that.
Is she a karate expert or?
No, Liz is really cool about it, you know, and it's actually really great to have her out here with me on the road because it definitely keeps you on your toes and makes sure that you're doing what you're supposed to do while you're out here it's awesome to have Liz out here. You know, she's my best friend in the whole world. I love her, you know, so much. And it's exciting to see people giving you attention for what you're doing and getting into the music. That's always a really cool thing. But she helps me keep it all in perspective.
Oh, I can totally imagine that. Now, this CD that you got right now, this time around, you got some cool tracks on there. I mean, that's what I love about Jesus. The guitar work at the start of that was sweet. And then lyrically, it takes you on a beautiful journey and just kind of lays it out straight. You know, there it is.
I wanted to keep that one as simple as possible and just kind of make it almost a song that you could speak, you know, and just let people know without any question exactly what I think about Jesus and what I believe. And I think that song does it. You know, this album really takes you on a lot of different journeys. You know, it's goofy and fun with songs like Convoy. We've had a lot of fun with that song, a lot of great success on both sides of the border with that one. And songs like Leaving have more of a rock kind of edge to them. And there's comedy on it with this The King, and it just kind of takes you all over the map. I've been very excited about the response we've been getting from it. The album just went gold after two singles, which is just incredible, way more than I was expecting. And we're having a great time out here.
Now the song Alberta Bound, who wrote that one originally, do you know?
Well, Gordon Lightfoot, I think, was the one that originally wrote that one and performed it. And, of course, you know, he's out from this neck of the woods. And I wanted to pay homage to him, you know, because I think that he did a great song with that. But I also wanted to try and write it from an Albertan's perspective. And that's the idea behind Alberta Bound on this album. It's a different song than the original one. But it talks about all the things that I love about Alberta.
Have you ever heard of a group called the Good Brothers?
Absolutely, yeah. I actually got to hang with those guys backstage while I was hosting the Canadian Country Music Awards this last year. They were inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Well, they're hometown heroes in my town. My sister grew up with them, and are they still touring, those guys?
Oh, yeah, they're all over the place. And they actually played Alberta Bound on the award show, the original version, so it was really cool to hear that.
The Good Brothers, man, I've seen them so many times, not even funny. I remember the Richmond Hill Winter Carnival, you know, those guys out there beating the guitars to death in like minus 40.
They're great guys.
Well, listen, Paul, I just hugely appreciate the time you spent. The one thing I'm a little concerned about, though, is the fact that you like roasted garlic.
Yeah, I have a kind of a complicated palate, I guess you could say, and I love all different kinds of food. That's one of the downfalls out here on the road. We've all gained about 15 pounds so far, so...
Seriously, roasted garlic, that's not a good thing, mate. It really isn't. It's not good for the romance.
You know, you should try it with some goat cheese and a little bit of crispy toast. It's
man.
Very good.
You got to go on to Fear Factor and eat some of that stuff. That's just wrong. Hey, one last thing before I let you go. Liz, will you thank her for putting up with you?
I'll do it.
Just thank her for me. I think that anybody that can put up with someone on the road in this industry and being, you know, just be the supportive wife that she is. I'm sure she's not perfect, right, Paul?
No, she is.
Oh, she is.
She's absolutely perfect.
Man, I hate when that happens. When are you coming back to Ontario?
I hope soon. You know, we're going to, just finish off with this tour right now. Liz and I are taking off to Cambodia for about 10 days with Samaritan's Purse, and we're really excited about doing that. We're going to be handing out some of the shoe boxes that they do with their Operation Christmas Child, and I think that's going to be a really fun time. And then back home to Calgary for Christmas, and we'll see. You know, next year we'll probably be hitting the fair circuit pretty heavily. And hopefully we'll see everyone in the summertime.
Paul, I am so proud of anybody that can do Jesus in the non-conventional, quote, Christian music way.
Well, thank you. I'd appreciate your prayers. And, you know, the people that are listening out there, I love doing what I'm doing, you know, and I love performing music. I feel like it was what I was made to do. And I love letting people know why I do it and why I was given the opportunity and gift to do it. And so, you know, if they would, you know, I hope that you would, you know, continue to pray for me and the guys in the band, that we'd have the strength and the ability to keep doing what we're doing and keep hopefully bringing glory to God's name.
Paul Brandt, thank you so, so much for being on the Drew Marshall Show. It was great to have this chat.
Thanks, Drew.
All the best, mate.
Take care, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that, of course, was Mr. Paul Brandt. One of the greatest hits he's got going right now is Convoy. You got to listen to this tune, folks. It's a beauty. We'll be right back in a few minutes to say goodbye and close off this week's show. Take care.
got the front door. Good buddy, mercy, safe alive. Looks like we got us a convoy.
It was the dark of the moon on the 6th of June in a Kenworth pulling logs. Cab over Pete with a reefer on and a Jimmy hauling hogs. We was headed for Bear on I-10 about a mile out of Shaggy Town. I says, Pigpen, this here's the rubber duck and I'm about to put the hammer down.
Cause we got a little convoy rocking through the night. Yeah, we got a little convoy, ain't she a beautiful sight? Come on, join our convoy, nothing gonna get in our way. We're gonna roll this trucking convoy across the USA. Convoy.
Now, Breaker Pigpen, this here's the duck, and you want to back off them hogs? Yeah, 10-4, about 5 miles or so. 10, roger, them hogs, it's getting intense up here.
By the time we got into Tulsa Town, we had 85 trucks and all. But there's a room block up on the clover leaf, and them bears are wall to wall. And them smokies as thick as bugs on a bumper. They even had a bear in the air. I says, calling all trucks, this here's the duck. We about to go a-hunting there.
Cause we got a great big convoy rocking through the night. Yeah, we got a great big convoy. Ain't she a beautiful sight? Come on and join our convoy, nothing gonna get in our way. We're gonna roll this trucking convoy across the USA.
You wanna give me a 10-9 on that, Pigpen? Negatory, Pigpen, you're still too close. Yeah, them hogs is starting to close up my sinuses. Mercy sakes, you better back off another 10.
Well, we rolled up Interstate 44 like a rocket sled on rails. Oh, we tore up all of our swindle sheets and left them sitting on the scales. By the time we hit that Chi-Town, them bears was a-getting smart. He brought up some reinforcements from the Illinois National Guard. There's armored cars and tanks and jeeps and rigs of every size. And them chicken coops was full of bears and choppers filled the skies. Oh, we shot the line and we went for broke with 1,000 screaming trucks. And 11 long-haired friends of Jesus in a chartreuse microbus.
Rubber duck to Sodbuster, come over. Yeah, 10-4 Sodbuster, listen, you want to put that microbus in behind that suicide jockey? Yeah, he's home.